the zone. Dropped off. Jones. Jones. Shoot. Save. Rebound. Save.
Oh, look out.
To break it. Ahead for guess who? Patrick Kane. He's in. He scores. Patrick Kane. On the ice he used to call home for 16 seasons. Red Wings a winner in overtime.
In this building, he had 644 career points.
Hey now, welcome to season 14, episode number 4 of the Sportscasters Podcast. My name is Steve Bennett. Great show for you today. Jeff Passan from ESPN, the very first guest on this program back in 2011, back when he was just the author of a book called Death of the BCS, writing about baseball on Yahoo. 20,000 followers or so he had then, well over a million now, talking about baseball for ESPN, and he still takes care of me. Good guy, Jeff. We talked to him for an hour in a car ride he had at spring training a couple days ago. Interesting story about that that's kind of changed the podcast a little bit. So Jeff had told me he'd be available that night after dinner. He didn't have a lot of details. I told him I had a dinner, but I'd be close to home. And we figured, okay, we'll work it out. It's a long drive. We're going to have time, whatever. So he's texting me, and I'm at dinner, and I say, okay, I'm leaving now. And then he's texting me again, why aren't you home? And I'm like, it's further than I thought. And I rush in the door. I get ready to call him. I call him up, and something, he can't hear me. So I unplug the iPad, and I can hear him, and he can hear me now. And something's wrong. And I realize, oh, it's when I plug it in. Oh, the board is off. So I go to flip the board on, and the board won't go on. So I say, oh, it must be unplugged. So I go around the other side to plug it in and realize it's broken in half. My wife was spring cleaning and got it caught between the wall and the table and snapped it in half. Didn't even realize it. And I had no board. So I was like, all right, Jeff, let me call you back. I know this is the time to do it. I have to figure out how to get it to work without the board. It's a guy with a million followers. I need to get this interview in. You know, the clock is ticking, and I end up doing it through my laptop with Skype. So if it sounds a little off, the quality's okay. I'm pretty hot. He's a little lower than it would have been if we would have been able to use FaceTime audio. But we got it in. It was a near tragedy, and I have a new board, which I'm trying to figure out right now, and it's blowing my ears out. The headphone volume is so loud. But if I turn the headphone volume down, it turns the gain down. So I don't know. I need to get my dad. My dad is a sound man for a rock and roll band. So I need to get him in here to help me with the board. It's brand new and kind of figure out what I'm doing wrong. But I got two episodes this week. It's a busy week of the Sportscasters. First of all, we are going to have today's episode, which will be Jeff Passan. And also, we will have the author of a book called Kingdom on Fire, Kareem Wooden and Walton and the Turbulent Days of the UCLA Basketball Dynasty with Scott Howard Cooper. And then later in the week, we will have Andrew Marchand, formerly of the New York Post. He's with The Athletic. We're getting the second interview on a podcast. He did one with Richard Deitch, which came out today. Don't listen to that one. Or you can. I'm just kidding. Of course, listen to Richard's. And then see how I do. I'll have him Thursday. And then also we will have on Brett Martin, who is the author of a book called Difficult Men. He lives in New Orleans. He's been on a few times over the years. One of my favorite. We do an hour with him. So today it's Passan. Then we'll do Scott Howard Cooper on his UCLA book. And then later in the week we'll have Andrew Marchand, formerly the New York Post, now with The Athletic, to talk sports media. And we'll also have Brett Martin And we talk about the Mets, we talk about baseball, we talk about the Sopranos, television, difficult men, a really wide-ranging conversation with a great dude, one of my favorite guests. So busy week, a lot to do. First things first for today, the Sabres still stink. Man, Inter Milan is an incredible, incredible machine. We're inching closer to my Italy games in New York. I'm going to see the Italy national team, if you didn't know yet, in New York City / New Jersey. It's actually in Harrison, New Jersey, where the Red Bulls play, the MLS team in New York. They play Ecuador, and the lineup, the roster call-up should be available for that soon. So looking forward to that. Looking forward to seeing the Azzurri play, of course, for the first time in 2024. They'll have a game Friday before I see them in Fort Lauderdale, and I'll watch that Friday, then drive to New Jersey, see the Azzurri on Sunday, and then spend a few days with my brother in New York City and New Jersey, see Hollywood Dave. Speaking of Hollywood Dave, we'll also have a 24-inch podcast next week, probably on Monday. So a lot going on here. One last thing tonight will be Patrick Kane. Talk about his return to Chicago. And wanted to say rest in peace to Chris Mortensen, one of the great NFL insiders that unfortunately I never had Mortensen on. Had Schefter on, you know, had Rappaport on, had a bunch of NFL insiders, but unfortunately never had Mortensen. But really sad to see him pass away. One of those sports media guys I just always loved to listen to him talk. Always knew what he said was important. I always believed what he said. He was a really, really good, really, really good at his job. And it's disappointing that he passed away. And he's going to be missed, certainly, in the world of sports media and sports in general. So rest in peace to Mort. All right, with that said, let's take a break. And we will be right back with Jeff Passan. Hey, Jeff, what's going on, my man?
How are you?
Well, I'm laughing right now because in the wonderful article that John Wertheim wrote about me, he mentions that you have said in the past that this show reminds you of Wayne's World. And this show has never had a more Wayne's World moment than I just had the last 15 minutes. So,
yeah, I'm hoping the quality is up to the standard that you've set in recent years, but if we go lo-fi for a show, it's not bad.
Yeah, you know, the FaceTime audio innovation has been so great for my quality because it's just a better connection than Skype is. I can't use it all right. The time because if the other person doesn't have Apple, it doesn't work. But hopefully this is good, but I'll tell everybody, I rushed home from chicken wings to do this with Jeff, and I go to call him, and I realize the power in my board is out, and I go to plug it in and realize it's out because it's snapped in half. Half of it is in the inside, the other half was on the ground. So I had to quickly try to get it to work with just my laptop, and initially I was trying to do it on FaceTime audio but couldn't record, and I just switched to Skype and network, so here we are, but yay. how's the Super Bowl, Jeff?
Super Bowl was like one of the best weekends of my life. I got to go there with my kid, and even before the Chiefs won, it was a pretty incredible weekend. But being there with him, getting to see that, being above the end zone where Mecole Hardman caught the touchdown to walk it off. I mean, the entire experience was spectacular and something I will 100% never forget.
Was that your first Super Bowl?
Yes.
Amazing.
I've never really had the inclination to go, but you know, these things are very fragile, and by these things I mean opportunities that organizations have. And the fact that the Chiefs have had as many as they've had, they are very lucky. They're really good, too, don't get me wrong, but they're lucky. And, you know, this could be the last one. I doubt it, but I wanted to make sure that I got to see at least one Patrick Mahomes Super Bowl, and it was a pretty good one to see.
You hear all these stories from athletes who are like, you know, got there my first year, and I thought I was just going to go every year, you know, and never went back. Yep. Like, you hear that all the time, so you never know it.
It was like, it was honestly, it was like Evan Longoria in the World Series last year.
Yeah.
You know, the guy who's late in his career and got there extremely early and was cherishing it a lot more this time around.
Now, let me ask you this, and you don't have to say how or why, but did you ever have to be Jeff Passan to make this happen, or did regular guy Jeff Passan make this happen?
What do you mean by make this happen?
Like getting tickets and getting to the stadium and maybe where you stayed or the experience in general. Like, did you have an edge in the planning, or did you just do it?
Yes. No, this was not regular guy.
Okay. Hey, gotcha. That's what I thought, because you did have a fantastic spot. So I'm like, I think Jeff may have and you use what you got. I mean, I'm not criticizing.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah, I was just curious.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I was just curious what way it went. I wasn't in any way, Chris. That's great. I'm glad you and your son had a great time. And yeah, I don't think I'll ever get to a Super Bowl. I don't know. First of all, I don't know if my team will ever be in it again. And then also, like, it just seems like a really, really, you gotta go all in. You know what I mean? Like, and I don't know. I would just be too nervous. I would spend all that money and we lose. It'd be like the Broncos 49ers Super Bowl and it was like 56-10. You know what I mean? I'd be like, I couldn't do it. I'd be like, you know what? I'm just gonna watch from home just because I'm too negative, you know, with my teams. I would just believe that they would. Like, even in 2010, like, I was like, oh, we finally get here, and now we got Peyton Manning. He's going to kill us, you know. We lost three games in a row going into the playoffs. We didn't have any momentum. I was like, ah. And, of course, we won, which was great. But, you know, I think I'm saying I have no balls, I think is what I'm saying. But
no, I think you're saying that you're a reasonable person, and it costs a lot of money.
Yeah.
And so that is not unreasonable at all. And the NFL viewing experience,
so good at home. So yep.
It is.
Yeah.
It's so good that, I mean, listen, it was better there.
Sure. Especially the game you got. Yeah.
Yeah, but it's pretty damn great at home. So I don't begrudge anyone who wants to stay.
I've been to WrestleMania 6 in the Toronto Sky Dome. I've been to Game 4 of the 1999 Stanley Cup Finals. And I was at Game 4 of the 1992 World Series. And then I've been to like 24 other NHL playoff games.
Yeah.
But in terms of, like, playoffs, that's, I think, obviously I've been to NFL games and I've been to Major League Baseball games. And but at that level, that's what I've got. I mean, how many World Series in a row have you been to now?
I've had a bunch of NFL playoff games because of the Chiefs.
Yep.
One Super Bowl now, 20 World Series, 4 Olympics, two Stanley Cup Finals, one PGA Tour Major, the Daytona 500, never done an NBA Finals, never done like a Masters, but I've lived a pretty good sports life, not gonna lie.
Yeah, my brother's been to the Masters. Someone that he went to school with at Yale, their dad was a member. So they even got to, like, set their chairs up, you know, before the day started, wherever they wanted and stuff.
Fancy.
Yeah, so he's been to that back when he was living his rich kid life in Connecticut. But, yeah, WrestleMania 6 was pretty cool because it was the first event I think I had been to with that many people. I'd been to a Bills game already. I'd been to Bills and Saints in 89. But Skydome's different because it's inside and everything, and yeah.
I think I did maybe the first I think the first Survivor Series was in Cleveland.
The first two were, yep. Yep, the first two. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So I did a Survivor Series, and I sat behind Brad Daugherty. Yeah, I don't know if you remember Brad Daugherty, but he was a 7-foot center for the Cavs.
So you were looking in the back of his head all night?
Yeah, me at 7 years old sitting behind the 7-foot guy, not great. And I did WrestleMania a couple of years ago, which was stupendous. Like obscenely good seats for that one, and that makes all the difference.
So my dad had taken me to, shortly after WrestleMania 3, there was a TV taping in Buffalo, and I got tickets for Christmas, and we waited all, you know, it was June, so we waited, what, half a year, and finally it's time to go, and we go, and I was the biggest Steamboat fan in the world because that was my favorite feud going into WrestleMania 3. I mean, I was huge Hulk too, but Steamboat was like my thing. Like Hulk was everybody. Steamboat was like my guy or whatever. Yep. And so they were advertising, you know, Ricky Steamboat will defend the Intercontinental title. But they never said against two. So I was excited. I was a little nervous, but I'm like, he'll be fine, you know. And then Fink like says, like, the next match is for the you know. So I'm like, here we go. And then Honky Tonk Man's music plays. I remember I turned to my dad. I'm like, oh, perfect. I'm like, this guy sucks. I'm like, this guy's never beaten Steamboat. You know what I mean? I'm like, this is amazing. And Steamboat lost the belt right in front of me. And I cried for 45. I was 7 years old. I cried for 45 minutes. My dad had to take me to the concourse and buy me nachos and a Hulk Rules foam finger to calm me down.
Wow.
Then we get back in the arena. Hulk finally comes out. He does a snake pit. You remember Jake used to have a little set where he'd do like a Piper's Pit thing, but it was, you know, snake pit. And Hulk comes out, and Fuji brings out Killer Khan, who then spits green shit in the Hulk's eyes and blinds him. And I'm crying again, right? My dad, on the way home, my dad's like, we're never going to wrestling again. You know what I mean? So finally, my mom talks him into taking me to WrestleMania 6 because it's just in Toronto. You know, oh, it'll be a great day. You guys will love it. We were so high up. Do you remember that home run that Canseco hit in the 89 ALCS? It was like in the... Yeah, we were like another 200 feet higher than that ball landed. Like, we couldn't have been in a worse spot. And then, of course, it ends with Hulk losing the belt to Warrior, and I cried the whole way home again. And I remember my dad telling him, I told you never again last time. It's never again this time. He's like, the little shit was crying the whole way home, you know, like, as only my dad could could put it. So that was the end of me and my dad going to wrestling.
I think what we've learned here is that you cried a lot.
Well, listen, between 1984 and probably 1993, the only two things in life I cared about were hockey and wrestling.
All right.
You know what I mean? That was my whole life. The Sabres and wrestling. And then came the Saints, you know, and then... And then
like
the Braves.
Prime Alex McGillney era.
Oh,
right?
Yeah. Dude, his 76 goal season, there was nothing like it. We were still at the odd, and you would go to a game, and the second he touched the puck, everyone would, like, literally, you know, the cliche, you'd be at the edge of your seat. Like, the whole atmosphere changed because you just knew he was going to score, and he did. And then he would. You know what I mean? Like, when you get 76 game goals in a year, you basically score every game.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, I mean, there's 80, I think there was 80 games then, and he scored 76 goals. So, I mean, that was unbelievable. Unbelievable memories. Alexander McGillney's a really interesting guy because, you know, he defected to come here. Our GM picked him up in Switzerland and smuggled him into the United States, and there was this time where rumors were going around that he didn't want to fly to the games. He was afraid to fly, and everyone was getting on his case. And it turns out he was afraid to fly because the Russian mafia was threatening to blow the plane up because they were extorting him. And he had to wear a wire, and the FBI tackled and arrested like three KGB guys in this restaurant in downtown Buffalo called Chef's. that were trying to extort money from Alexander Mogilny. So,
things I did not know. That's what I get on the Sportscasters podcast.
Exactly. And here's what I don't know that I need from you. Your turn. What the hell has Alex been doing? What was all this? What did we accomplish with all these weird trades? And just what I don't quite understand it. I kept saying, like, I'm going to wait to judge it. You know what I mean? I kept saying, like, every trade, like, okay, this is just a trade for the next trade. You know what I mean? And we trade Von Grissom.
I think getting Jared Kelnick is an upgrade over Eddie Rosario.
Yeah, we needed a left fielder. Yep.
I think getting Aaron Bummer is an upgrade in the bullpen. I think getting Ronaldo Lopez is, you know, it's certainly an upgrade in the bullpen if he goes there, but it could be one in the rotation as well, considering how poorly Bryce Elder pitched toward the end of last season. I think Chris Sale is an upgrade. So, I don't know, man. I think they're a better team than they are last year. Do you not?
Well, I was never sold on last year's team. I know that sounds funny. And, of course, you made fun of me, as you probably should have all year, when I would text you about how nervous I was about them. But everything I said about them last year came true. I said all year, if Max Fried doesn't win game one, the Phillies are going to pick them off. Because I always knew, you could tell the whole year it was going to be the Phillies. You know, the way the standings, it was pretty obvious that's where we were headed. And the Phillies had three starters. We had one and a half. You know, Max Fried didn't even show up until, what, August or whatever. And Spencer Strider did his best. And even he really, I mean, his game was won, you know, on heroics. You know what I mean? In the later innings. Right. It's not like he pitched fine that night, but he didn't. I just knew that they were ripe to be picked off. They were bullies. You know, they beat up on these average regular season teams. You know, they were stat collectors. You know, and I just never thought they were a championship team. And I know this format.
Do you feel the same way about this team?
I don't know yet. You know what I mean? I'm going to give them 50 games. I give every team 50 games. I'm not even going to think about that till Memorial Day at the earliest. You know what I mean? Like, and look at the last team that won the championship. No one ever thought they were a championship team, right? I mean, they were, what, four games under 500 at the All-Star break, so. It's a different world, baseball, now. You know what I mean? But the way this form...
I mean, you're just... In baseball now, it's very simple.
Get in.
You're trying to be one of 12.
Yep. Get in.
And then you're hoping that you catch a heater in October. And that may be dissatisfactory to some people. I understand the people who say, well, what's the regular season for, or what's the point of the regular season? It's not an unreasonable thing to say, but when it comes to winning a World Series, I mean, the Texas Rangers barely made the playoffs last year and were clearly the most dominant team in the playoffs, not just because they won the World Series, but the dominance by which they did win it. Like, they exerted themselves, and everybody else paled in comparison. And there were points in the regular season where Texas looked like that, but the Rangers saved their best for October. And I think
the Phillies had the year before. Yeah, the Phillies, the Braves had the year before that, the Nats before that. That's what this format is now, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And I'm okay with it because I feel like it's a binary thing. Either you're okay with something or you're not okay with it. And not being okay with something that is completely out of my control is generally not a good thing to do in life. So would it be the format that I would use if I were in charge of the sport? Man, you know, maybe not necessarily, but I understand it. Let's put it that way.
I will say this. I'm fine with the format. Like you said, the format is what it is. But if I was in charge of a team, I don't know if I would want the bye anymore. I don't know that there's enough advantage to shut my team down like that. I have seen very little evidence.
You would want the bye.
I don't know, man.
You're telling you're You're telling me after 162 games, after 6 months, where you essentially have 2 weeks off worth of individual games, where you have a sport that has the biggest grind of a regular season in major North American professional sports, you're telling me you don't want to give your guys a little rest? Then you're a dumbass.
I do want to give my guys rest, but my guys, it's the rhythm. You lose the rhythm of the game. Like, it, what?
No, you don't lose the rhythm of the game. That's such a fallacy.
I don't know, man.
I'm sorry. If you can't weather 3 days off, if the detriment of having 3 days off...
Oh, it's more than three, though. It's more than three.
It's four or five.
Okay. Yeah.
Fine. It still stands. If you can't weather that, then you weren't any good to begin with. It's not the time off that hinders these teams. It's the nature of the game. It's the fact that there's no one individual, generally speaking, who is able to go and completely take over a game. It used to be starting pitching, but, you know, they've kind of done
right.
away with
they
that.
They take them out. Yeah, they take them out. Yeah.
Exactly. Yep. And if you want to bemoan the way that starting pitchers are used right now, I'm in full agreement with you. And I think it's problematic, and I think it's worse for the game, and I could go on ad nauseum about it.
Yeah, you wrote the book on it, too.
It's not the time off. I firmly believe that.
I guess just, like, if you're a Braves fan, right now you're like, okay, let's look at the last three teams we had. You know, 200 game teams that got byes and got clipped out in the first round, and one, you know, barely 90 win team who got to keep playing and went all the way to the World Series. And it's interesting too, because you talk about baseball doesn't have the dominant players. Like, look at the Braves, right? We won without our best player and haven't been able to win with him. You know, Acuna was not there for the World Series. You know,
yeah,
and
I think this is a wonderful case, Steve, of causation and correlation are two very different things.
Fair. That's fair. And it's still early, right? It's still too small of a sample size probably to make some of the conclusions. I mean, how many years has this format been in? Only three, right? This exact way?
No. No.
How many?
Even. I mean,
not even? Yeah.
No. No, it's 2 years. Came after the collective bargaining agreement in 2022.
Right. So it's too early probably to judge anyway. And I'm just being reactive because my team lost. I understand that.
Yeah, I mean, you're a little hurt, you're a little sore. That's understandable, but I don't know. I'm just used to it by now and accepting of it, and maybe that's easier because I don't root for anyone.
Yeah, and you know, like growing up, you know, I started being a Braves fan in '89. That's when I started watching every day on TBS, and they had many teams in the '90s that had the same issue, right? That they would. You know, the 93 team that lost to the Phillies or the 97 team that lost to the Marlins. Then when the DS, they lost the team that lost to the Cubs when Rafael Furcal year, I think that was 05 maybe. Whatever, like they had many teams that were great regular season teams and then for whatever reason didn't win in the playoffs. It's part of just getting there every year. Right? When you're a team that gets there every year, you're not going to win the tournament every time, right? The Dodgers have had that problem. I don't know.
Look at the Indians back in the 90s and the 2000s.
Yeah. I was just talking to a big Indians fan. I forget who was like 95 hurt, but at least it's the Braves. Like 97 is the one he can't get over, you know, losing the way they did with the taking it to the ninth with the win. Or maybe it was. Yeah, no, maybe it was just me and Casas talking about it, but...
Yeah, honestly, both of them sucked.
Yeah. I bet.
Both of them were just straight-up dick punches.
They were both such great World Series, too, though, you know?
Yeah, I don't quite remember them that way.
Fair enough. Although I remember the 91 one as a great World Series. The Braves didn't win it. But maybe I guess we won after, so... Lessons
yeah,
of blow,
I was
maybe.
Say,
yeah,
you are. Your objectivity on the matter is little bit compromised by the things that happened thereafter.
Do you think
I'm sure I would be much more accepting of 95 and 97 as a child if they had won somewhere in that vicinity.
Yep. You're right. Poor Carlos Baerga, I think, made every last out in like every game the Braves won in the 90s. He popped out for the last out at least three of the four games to end the game. It's like, wow.
Yeah.
That's rough.
And now Carlos Baerga is in the media. So there you go.
There you go. What's Florida like so far? Like, what's the buzz of spring training? Like, what's on everybody's mind this year so far? Like, what are you hearing? What are you seeing? Like, you're in Florida, I assume, right? Not Arizona.
I am. So much of the baseball world right now, though, is Dodger-centric.
Yeah, Ohtani-centric. You love Ohtani, too.
Yeah, of course I love it. Who doesn't love Ohtani?
Yeah. I'm indifferent. Oh, I've barely ever seen him play. He played at 10:30. He plays at 10:30 every night. I don't know. I don't relate to him in any way. I don't know anything about him.
Well, that's your own fault for going to bed early. And how much do you know about other athletes? I think you relate to greatness, do you not? Like, isn't that what we look at and hold as the standard, not what we know about a guy, but what we see him do?
Yeah, I mean, I don't mean personally. I just mean I haven't created any fan player connection to him. You know what I mean? I don't have an Ohtani moment.
That's on you then. That's 100% on you.
I guess.
Go out there and do ridiculous things.
Yeah.
I mean, he is the most talented person who's ever played baseball. And you as a baseball fan, I would have assumed that was enough to engage you. And I think it's interesting and telling that it's not, and maybe a little bit indicative of where Major League Baseball is as a sport now, that somebody who really likes baseball.
I love baseball.
Still isn't vibing with Ohtani. That's
the team stinks.
That's not great.
The team was always bad. It'll be interesting this year. You know, it's going to be a totally different narrative, right? He's going to be on a team. He's probably going to win 100 games. You know, he's going to play some playoff games. You know, maybe this is the year, and I assume it will be like in more of a heel role, but that's fine. You know, I've come to appreciate many guys who battered my team over the years. That's not an issue. You know what I mean? I love Luke Kuechly still to this day, you know, and every single time we played the Panthers, he somehow had 20 tackles and drove me nuts. I love Steve Young to this day. So I can get with a guy who crushes my team. It's not that, you know, but it's just he's been irrelevant to me. He lives in a different time zone. He never played in an important game. You know, there's a language barrier there. You know what I mean? I've never heard an interview with him really, or you know what I mean? He's never been. I think it's a detriment to Major League Baseball more than me. He's not accessible enough to me. You know? I don't know.
Yeah, that's by design. That's by choice. He doesn't want to be.
Right. And, well, I heard a lot of Angels fans complain about that when he first signed that contract, that he was out and about in L.A. And they're like, oh, now he wants to get out? So I heard that from, you know, Angels fans.
Well, I mean, I would rather go out in L.A. than Orange County, too.
That's fair. Yeah, I mean, he is who he is. And I'm not hating on him. Like I said, I haven't. The Babe Ruth stuff annoys me, you know, because I just think it's like, let him have his career. And that, you know what I mean? Like, I don't know. It's like Patrick Mahomes can't be better than Brady until he's played his whole career, and then we can compare them. Yeah, I don't know what the rush is, I guess. You know, he may very well be better. I just don't know why we have to call it either way now. You know what I mean?
I don't think anyone's making the argument that Mahomes is better than her.
Oh, it started this. I definitely heard people make the argument since this last Super Bowl.
I mean, I would argue that Mahomes is a superior quarterback to Brady, but that doesn't mean he's had a better career.
Right, more talented, I think, right? He's got more natural ability and talent. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think that's even a question.
And that's fair. That's fair.
He objectively is more talented, but to me, the sum of a career, or rather the product of a career, is talent multiplied by longevity. And I have I have much more respect, I think probably than most, for guys who play for a long time. And I think that's probably a function of me seeing how difficult it is to be a really good professional athlete for 1 year, let right. alone for a quarter century like Tom Brady did.
Yeah, and you know what's interesting about Brady, too, is like he had different phases of his career. You know, he had that initial 3 out of 4. Then they weren't good for a while. You know, then they had the next run, and then he had a run, you know, and won another one, Tampa, too. You know, I just, it's like, you know, sometimes you just grew up with something. Like, I just grew up with Babe Ruth is the greatest of all time. And when Ohtani is done with his career, if you want to say, okay, he no longer is because Ohtani passed him in these metrics, I will get behind that. But 5 minutes after he showed up, I had trouble with it, I guess. And it kind of turned me off a little bit. You know, sometimes the hype.
Yeah, I don't think anyone was making the argument that Ohtani was better than Ruth before he played in MLB.
I think
the argument was that this guy, it's a very Mahomes versus Brady argument, actually. It's that this guy throws harder than Ruth ever did. He hits the ball every bit as hard, or at least if we're going to compare, you know, if we can't compare exit velocity between eras, then, at very least we can compare him to his peers. And it's like Ohtani, Judge, Stanton are in their own, you know, bucket, and everyone else is not as good. So that's a, you know, that's a check in his favor. But yeah, he needs to have years of doing this for us to get on board with that.
Are you someone who thinks he needs to win something too? Or are you not a ring guy? How much do you put stock into that?
I'm not a ring guy.
Not a ring guy. No.
I think it would be fantastic if he did win, but I'm not going to sit here and say Dan Marino wasn't a superlative quarterback because he never won a ring.
Right. Yeah, I think Dan Marino could still be in the top 10, but I don't think you can put him ahead of Montana. You know what I mean?
No. I mean, listen, I weigh rings.
Right.
When you're looking at the picture of someone's career, you certainly have to include championships in there, even though championships aren't won individually. But I weigh career accomplishments more than I do championships. And if you're on the other side of that, I completely understand. You know, I talked with Chris Sale yesterday, and he said, we play this game for one reason. It's to win championships.
Yeah.
All the individual accomplishments that he had, they all pale in comparison, he said, to his ring with the Red Sox in 2018. And I get that. It's a perfectly reasonable argument. I just think that when you boil team sports down to championships, it tends to devalue the individual. And I'm all for celebrating individual greatness.
And that quote from Sal is exactly why Sean Payton said to the referee on the sidelines after the worst miscall in the history of sports, that was a legacy-changing mistake. Because that mistake changed the legacy of Breeze and Payton. Who knows what would have happened in the Super Bowl, but they were about to have the opportunity to go to two. And one would have been against Manning, and one would have been against Brady. You know what I mean? And if they win that second with, and remember, that was the horrible Super Bowl between the Rams and the Patriots. You know, you know, if the Saints win that game, and certainly we saw the Patriots were vulnerable that day. What's the conversation now about Breeze and Peyton versus without that? So I relate to what Sal's saying there. You know what I mean? That it's like. Certainly the way...
Peyton more than Breeze, honestly.
Yeah, probably true. Probably true. Because Breeze has so many significant individual achievements. Maybe that...
I don't know. I feel like the difference between two rings and three rings is pretty distinct.
Well, they only have one. They both have one.
Right. I understand that. I'm saying, like, I still don't think...
Oh, you think two is still not enough. Okay. Yeah. That's fair. That's fair, too. Although, two, I feel like, is a different level. It levels you up. You know?
Yeah, for sure. And as you know, as great as Breeze's counting stats are, I still think he's behind Peyton pretty clearly.
Yeah, that's fine. I mean, that's fine. Certainly in terms of raw talent, he's behind him.
Yes.
In terms of maybe like getting the most out of his talent, I think Breeze is way ahead. And Breeze did beat him in a Super Bowl. Now, again, like that's not totally fair to say Breeze beat Manning because there was, you know, 22 other guys on the field or whatever each time. Although Breeze in his last drive went ahead, and on Manning's last drive, he threw a pick six to lose the game. So there is that too. But
very fair.
Interesting stuff. So what else is going on down there? What else do we need to know about baseball? What's on your notebook? Like, what are the two or three things going into this season that you're tracking now and you're most interested to see how they play out as we get to the regular season?
I want to see where Blake Snell, Jordan Montgomery, and Matt Chapman sign. They are still unsigned free agents to this point. And for players, especially, you know, Snell coming off his second Cy Young award, that is not something you see very often. And I like the fact that there are not a lot of tanking teams, excuse me, in baseball this season. Like, you know, the spending this offseason was not ideal, and some teams that are good didn't go out and spend a whole lot, and some teams that are bad didn't necessarily go out and spend a whole lot either, but still harbor hopes of contention. And, you know, when you're looking at teams that you know are going to stink this year, the A's are going to stink, the Rockies are going to stink, the White Sox are going to stink, and I think the Nationals are probably going to stink, but they have some young, you know, they have some guys. James Wood is one to keep an eye on. Dylan Cruz, the number one pick in the draft last year. They got guys coming, but they're probably going to stink too. Beyond that, you're going to have teams that are not good, but they're at least trying. You know, I look at Kansas City this year, and they went out and spent $100+ million this offseason in free agents and signed Bobby Witt to a $288 million contract extension. And they want to be good, you know, in the same division. I think Detroit is going to take a step forward this year. And the East is in the American League is an absolute nightmare. Baltimore, which won more than 100 games last year, has a chance to be better this year. Right. Though the Kyle Bradish injury doesn't help in that pursuit, but they went and they traded for Corbin Burns and, you know, bulked up their bullpen with Craig Kimbrell, and they have, you know, plenty of live arms there otherwise. So the East, I think, is going to be a real dogfight. The American League West, you've got the defending champions and the Rangers. The Astros are still really good.
Yep.
The Mariners have taken a step forward, and, you know, early in the offseason, it looked like they were selling in a bad way, but I think they rescued things toward the end. National League East, it's the Braves division, and really, like, the whole National League, I just look at it like all of this should be a prelude for a Dodgers Braves NLCS, because they are, to me, very clearly the two best teams in baseball.
Yeah, it would almost be a shame if they didn't play in it. You know what I mean? Like, it just...
Oh, it would. Yeah. Absolutely. And you know what, man? It would not surprise me at all if that were the outcome, because that's how baseball is.
Yep.
And,
yep,
you know, most of the time I love it. This year, I really want seven games between the Braves and the Dodgers, because I just think it would be such good baseball.
You mentioned the Orioles. Is there a team that could be the 2024 version of them?
Just in terms of like a big, because remember the Orioles weren't bad.
Yeah, they were. The year before, I remember we talked about should they add at the deadline, should they not? I remember they were kind of on the precipice. Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, it's funny because the Orioles still have the best farm system in baseball, and they're, you know, they're going to be adding Jackson Holliday, the number one prospect in baseball, the third consecutive one they've had after Adley Rutschman and Gunnar Henderson to this mega team already. And so, I mean, the Orioles are going to be nasty. And they finally have, you know, an owner who's going to go out and spend money and commit in David Rubenstein. So, like, they are going to be a force to be reckoned with. I'll throw a weird one out there. It's probably a personal favorite. I really like what Detroit's doing.
Okay, I was just going to ask about that.
I think they're probably still a bat or two short. But I like Riley Green. I like Kerry Carpenter. I like Spencer Torkelson. They signed Colt Keith to an extension before he played a day in the big leagues. Jace Young is going to be up. Like, they have pieces, and their pitching is, I think their pitching, their starting pitching in particular, has a chance to be really good. Tarik Skubal was like the best pitcher in baseball in the second half last year, certainly over the last 2 months of the season. And nobody knows who he is, and he was awesome. And so I think, with him and Reese Olson and Matt Manning and adding Jack Flaherty and Kenta Maeda to that rotation and getting Casey Mize back from Tommy John, like, there are there are pieces and parts there that have a chance to not yet, but eventually, I think, make a championship caliber contender. The Cubs are another team. You know, they took that small step last year. They just brought Cody Bellinger back. Cade Horton is a top 20 prospect in baseball. They've got Pete Crow Armstrong as well. Like, they have a really good farm system, and I think they're going to be able to pick from that. So I anticipate the Cubs will take a step forward this year, and I'm excited for the National League Central. I think the Reds are going to be good, and they're another team because they have that young core like the Orioles do with Ellie De La Cruz and Matt McClain and Noel DiMarte, Christian Encarnacion, Strand, Spencer Steer. Like, they've got a bunch of guys who could really be impact big leaguers. And so among them, the Brewers and the Cubs with the Cardinals sort of in the mix there, and even the Pirates, I think, have a chance to be a little bit better. It's a sneaky, tough division. I don't know that anyone's going to win 95 games, but I think all of them could at least be competitive.
The Cubs or the Pirates break my heart. You know what I mean? Like, remember what it was like in there in 15 and whatever year it was that they hosted those. I mean, that's the most beautiful, one of the most beautiful places in America, that stadium.
Second best park in the big leagues.
Oh my God. It's when you're sitting there on a summer night and the skyline is in the background and the bridges.
And
when they had those couple good years, the McCutcheon era or whatever, there was people standing on the walls. They were everywhere, and they brought that like Steelers fan mentality, you know, over to the ballpark, and it was awesome. And I just couldn't imagine owning the team and not saying, we need to do this every year. I don't know how, you know, that's just a team that breaks my heart. The Sportscaster are here with our friend Jeff Passan finishing up on another interesting moment in the Sportscasters and Jeff Passan history, as we mentioned in the beginning. This is another one for the books. Quickly, you last year turned me on to, I'm going to screw it up, but Jamboy Media, where you went and you played all those games. I didn't know about that at all. I had seen the original guy's videos where he like talks about highlights or whatever, but I didn't realize everything that was going on in his business. You know what I mean? So, and then
they have created a little empire, and it's pretty cool to see.
You did pretty well in the games too that you played. Were you a little nervous? Did you feel like, man, I gotta get all these guys? Like, was the pressure on or what?
Well, I was just broadcasting, so I didn't feel any pressure.
Well,
at all.
No, I mean like the trivia type games you played with them.
Oh, I thought you were talking about when my kid played Blitzball.
Well, that too. That's all in the same week, right? You recorded all that stuff in the same week, right?
Yeah. No, I do not feel any pressure with that stuff because I'm a cornucopia of useless information. So I feel generally pretty confident in my ability to know dumb shit. And that's all like, you know, stats and like, if I don't know baseball, that's a real problem.
Right.
Like, you know, people will call out fraudulence very quickly. And I don't fear a lot of stuff, but I definitely fear being called a fraud. I never want anyone to say that about me. And so I got to know my stuff. And sometimes it's a nice little litmus test.
I have your back if they ever do, Jeff.
phone a friend.
Yes, call me and say, look at it. Ask this guy, am I a fraud? And I will tell you. Tell them, no. The trivia stuff drives me nuts, and I don't know if you feel the same way, because they're younger than us over there for the most part. You know
yeah.
what I mean?
Yeah.
And it just blows my mind, you know, like when they're doing a trivia game and like they don't know that, I don't know, Walt Weiss won the Rookie of the Year in 1988 or something like that. You know what I mean? I understand they probably shouldn't know that, but
I don't judge anybody for his or her knowledge or lack thereof. There's enough going on in life right now where if it's important to you, you'll learn it. And if it's not, then you won't. And if it's not, that's perfectly okay.
That's fair.
I have reached the zen of middle age in understanding and accepting that which does not matter. And other people's knowledge doesn't fucking matter at all.
Again, we're talking about levels here, right? Like, I'm not talking about, like, this. Like, I would talk to you about, like, the meaning about my daughter's progression as a reader at school or something. You know, I'm strictly taking it from the point of view as like a nerdy guy watching a baseball trivia video and, you know,
yes.
not understanding why these kids who are 10, 15 years younger than me in some cases, again, and I was more framing it as a knock on myself, don't know that Walt Weiss was the third straight Oakland A to win the Rookie of the Year. You know what I mean? Like, I get that I'm the oddball, you know.
Yeah, you have like 80s and 90s baseball knowledge.
And they're better than me at the 15 to 23 stuff probably, because for some reason I don't remember as good as I used to, you know?
Yeah, that's called getting old.
Yeah.
It happens.
My long-term memory, still very sharp. I remember shit from the first grade, from 3 years old even. When you get to from 2011 on, I feel like I stopped remembering stuff that just happened. I can get it.
What year was Paul born?
16, 2016.
All right.
Yep.
All right. So
then you get to 16, there and forget it. Yep. Forget it from there.
Yeah. From 16 and on, you have an excuse.
Right.
From 11 to 16, I hold you entirely accountable and I'm ashamed of you.
Nope. I have an excuse. They poisoned me with drugs at the hospitals. When I was having my surgeries, they're giving me Dilaudid and all these drugs so I can survive the night without pain. And I think they screwed my memory up. You know what I mean? I think that's what they did. So I got that in my pocket at least.
All right. Totally fair.
All right. All right, Jeff. Do you have any questions for me tonight?
No, but I have to sneeze.
God bless.
I was trying to mute. I thought you were going to go off on a tangent there.
I'll let my sneeze go. I'll cut it for you.
And no, you don't have to cut it.
You want it in?
There's no need.
Okay.
Keep the sneeze in.
All right.
It humanizes me. Sometimes in the middle of a podcast, you got to sneeze.
Yes, and Wayne Campbell also would have left a sneeze in as well. So.
Yeah, because he wouldn't have known how to edit it out.
That's true. He would have needed someone from Rob Lowe's team to edit it out. In that case. All right. Well, I appreciate you as always. Still can't believe we're doing this together in 2024. You know, I always say, and you know, you were the first and here you still are. I appreciate that. I know you're busy and you don't do much of this anymore. So I appreciate that you still do it with me. And I do have one last question for you. Were you a little proud of me though when I got Bob Costas on the show?
Would you like me to be proud of you?
Well, yeah, kind of, because you're the OG, and
yes, I was very proud of you. I just, you know, I look at media people and like nobody impresses me because we're all just doing the same thing.
Sure.
Like whether
I get that.
Extremely well, whether it's an extremely well-known person or somebody who's writing preps for a 1,000 circulation newspaper, we are all putting in work, and where you get is as much a function of your opportunity as it is your talent. And so Bob Costas has done incredible things in this business and is leaving a legacy that might be unparalleled. So in that respect, I think it's super cool that you got him. But on the other hand, I think all sorts of people you've never heard of have really great stories and the ability to tell them too. And so I don't want to give them a short shrift by being a big old star fucker.
Well, don't forget, though, I've had many of those people as well over the years. You know what I mean?
Correct, which is why I appreciate why I appreciate what you do, because you don't just hold out for those big names. You acknowledge that others have great ability to contribute as well, and you give them the opportunities to do so.
I'll let you go after this. Here's the last two things about Casas, though, that I'll say, though. One, I have one Nona left, right? One grandparent left. She just turned 89. She doesn't know anyone who's ever been on this show except Bob Costas because of the Olympics. It was the one time I could say to her, you know, Nona, I had Bob Costas on. And, you know,
that's
like,
very cool.
You know, so there's that. So there was that part of it. And then the other thing was, you know, I went to Syracuse originally because I made an early decision because Bob Costas went there. Like, that was it. That was the total thought process as a 16-year-old. I want to go where Bob Costas went. And I was totally fine preparing for it. I wasn't nervous at all. And then the day before, I made a mistake and I searched his name in the podcast app. And I realized that virtually every podcast he was on, first of all, was actually a radio show that then they repurposed as a podcast. Or B, was with someone who is absolutely someone he knows in the real world. You know what I mean? Like, I think he was on one that Mike Lupica hosted. Like, I know him and Mike Lupica. They know each other in real life, you know? So then I got really...
I don't know that, but I would assume so.
Yeah.
There's contemporaries.
Yep. And after that, I got really nervous. And I was like, I don't know if I'm good enough for this. Why the hell is he doing this? You know, and I doubted myself. So you know what I did, Jeff? I called the one person who I knew would say, you are good enough. Actually, you're too good for Bob Costas. I called my mother, you know, and I said, and she told me, yes, honey, you're the best.
And that right there is a perfect encapsulation of life in your 40s,
when
sometimes you realize the only person who can tell you that you're good enough is mom.
That's right. Thanks, buddy. Best to the young pitcher. I'm going to be thinking about him and looking forward to baseball season and texting you every once in a while when you absolutely don't want to be texted to let you know how mad I am at some random Braves reliever.
Yeah, I look forward to acknowledging it and ignoring the sentiment therein.
And you ready for the new Pearl Jam album? You excited about the new Pearl Jam album? Have you heard the song?
I am ready for it. I am excited for it. And I have heard the new song. And
it's great, yeah.
I think that when there are bands with guys in their 50s putting out new music, my expectations are extremely low.
That's fair. They have said this is the most like Versus since Versus.
Well, so we'll can see. Only hope.
Yeah, we'll see. First song is good. First song is very good, so we will see. All right, buddy. I appreciate you always. Thank you for being there for me. I appreciate you.
Thanks for having me, Steve. Take it easy, dude.
Chapman Rock Blues, 73. From Millhead Maximus, yeah. Drop pitches lined up. Seems the Mounties had a summertime long way. But the chief told the people they had nothing to fear. The last thing they want to do is hang around here.
All right. Want to thank Jeff Passan for being on the podcast today. Always love having Jeff. All right, book club update. Book club is getting busy, as I told you it would start to. First, let's do this one. We have Kingdom on Fire, Kareem Wooden, Walton, and the Turbulent Days of the UCLA Basketball Dynasty by Scott Howard Cooper. It is available for sale today, March 5th, 2024. Get out there and buy it. Scott will join us in a minute. Also, two other ones to cover that come out in March. The New York Game, Baseball and the Rise of a New City by Kevin Baker. And Charlie Hustle, The Rise and Fall of Pete Rose and the Last Glory Days of Baseball by Keith O'Brien. Charlie Hustle comes out in mid-March. And we have the New York book, The New York Game, is out soon as well. So those are the three we started with. Again, we're going to finish out Kingdom Fire in a minute. We have a new one. It's called The Six Pack, On the Road in Search of WrestleMania, by Brad, and I'm going to have to learn his name between now and when we talk to him. This book comes out in April. Brad Bulkagen? I don't know. He wrote The Wax Pack, if you remember that book. A few years ago, it was a really popular book, On the Open Road in Search of Baseball's Afterlife. Was a New York LA Times bestseller list and one of NPR's best books of 2020. This is a similar journey as he seeks to find the wrestling heroes of his youth. I can't wait to talk to Brad about it. I started reading it. It's fantastic so far. And the book club is humming. We're off and going. I see Ian O'Connor has a book coming out. Joe Posnanski has a book coming out. Those are later in the year, but it's going to be a great year for sports books, as it always is. And if there's any sports books you want featured on the Sportscasters book club, the sportscasters@gmail.com or @sports_casters on Twitter. All right, let's take a break. When we come back, Scott Howard Cooper debuts. All right, our next guest today has covered professional and college sports since the 1980s for places like the Los Angeles Times, Sports Illustrated, ESPN, and more. He's a graduate of USC, but he wrote a book about UCLA. It's called Kingdom on Fire, Kareem Wooden, Walton, and the Turbulent Days of the UCLA Basketball Dynasty. He's making his debut on the Sportscasters today. A warm welcome to Scott Howard Cooper. Hello, Scott. Welcome. How are you doing today?
I'm great. How are you?
Really good. Kingdom on Fire, Kareem Wooden, Walton, and the Turbulent Days of the UCLA Basketball Dynasty. You know what I always think of first when I think of the UCLA Basketball Dynasty is I think of myself as a young sports fan, like 4 or 5. Like, one thing I knew for sure is that UCLA won a ton of basketball titles, like when my dad was a kid. You know what I mean? It was like one of those things you just know right away as a sports fan. You know that the Celtics and the Lakers were really good in the NBA. You know the Canadians were really good in the NHL. You know the Yankees were the main team in MLB. And UCLA was like the college basketball version of that team.
And that's the amazing thing, because it's all these years later and they are forever. It's obviously in large part due to the success that a lot of people love them, and certainly a lot of people hated them. The celebrations on those rare occasions when they lost are pretty funny. But I think the other reason is, look at the people involved. John Wooden is one of the most popular people in the last 100 years, maybe 200 years, in Los Angeles. in Southern California. And I'm not just talking about sports. And I think that to a large extent, that stretches around the country. When he would go and do appearances in other cities, when he would travel back east or to the south or any place else, he's beloved. And then you have the other two primary figures in this, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar and Bill Walton. And they are still not only with us, but very prominent for different reasons. Kareem, mostly because he's done so much in terms of speaking out on social issues, and Bill, because he is on TV quite a bit doing the basketball commentary. So these guys are forever.
Yeah, and Kareem just had a little bit, I don't want to say resurgence, but with the HBO show too, I think, you know, maybe a new audience of people is exposed to Kareem. Maybe that watched that show from the Jeff Perlman book. They did, what, two seasons of that. You know, I maybe to back up a step, I have to ask, how did a USC guy come to write a UCLA book? You didn't want to take up Pete Carroll's USC team, or, you know, there wasn't OJ in the there was no Trojan stories to tell you. Are you getting shit for that? Are your buddies?
Yeah. It's funny how many people notice it. Not just my buddies. Boy, my kids gave me, when I told them what I was doing, they gave me a look, and I think they went and tried to find their birth certificate to wonder if they could if they could renegotiate their deal. The truth is, I have a lot of fun with it. I've known a lot of wonderful UCLA people through the years. The UCLA community could not have been more helpful and wonderful to deal with as I did this project. What it really came down to is it's an amazing story, because I didn't want to just write about basketball games. I thought it was important and insightful to put it in the context of the times of America and college campuses in the 1960s and 1970s. And of course, it was a time of great upheaval. And that's why we use the word turbulence in the title, because that's exactly what it was. And so I was just struck all along, even though, as you say, it wasn't, it seemed a little bit odd for a USC person, a proud Trojan, to be doing something, shining a positive light on UCLA. It's just a story that would not let me go. I had been talking to people for many, many years about this story, about this project, doing interviews and just general conversation long before I had a book deal in place. It's just something that captivated me. I hope that energy comes through. I hope that comes through on the pages. I hope the readers get a feel for how excited I was to do this.
I understand why it was the right time to tell this story. Why was it the right time for you to write it?
The timing is a great point, because what we have now in 2024 is the 50th anniversary of the end of the dynasty.
Right.
And people like those anniversaries, those milestone moments. And it was seven championships in a row until North Carolina State beat UCLA in double overtime at the Final Four in the semis in Greensboro, North Carolina. And that ended the championship streak and also ended that window, because that's the last of the Walton gang. At that point, Bill Walton, Jamal Wilkes, Keith Wilkes at the time, Greg Lee, and several others graduate. And it's not only that they lost, but how they lost. And that's part of the story as well. And I get into that in the book. And so we have the 50th anniversary of the end of the dynasty. And hopefully the book has some legs and we come back around next year. And it's the 50th anniversary of John Wooden's last game, his last championship. So that's, I think that's what the valuable timing of it.
What about for you personally? Why was this the time to, I think of this line in The Wire, in season 5 of The Wire, they have the newspaper angle, and the one guy, you know, he gets laid off and he goes, oh, it's time to write the next great American novel. And I always think about that when I'm talking to authors. Why was that? I would know why it was for him. Why was it for you? Why was this the time? How did this start the project in general?
That basically because the publisher said, yeah, we like it.
Yeah.
It's something I had thought about a few years ago, and I ended up doing a Steve Kerr biography instead. Steve Kerr Life came out in 2021. And after that, in looking at where I go next and talking to my agent, she has a great ear, a great eye for these things, and said, UCLA, that's what we want to do. And I think because of the story, because Kareem and Bill Walton are still so front and center in our sporting world, and John Wooden, although he's been gone since 2010, is still with us in so many ways. And then when we looked at the calendar and saw that it had that extra hook of being the 50th anniversary, that's why.
Gotcha. It's interesting because you talk about 7 in a row. I think they won 10 out of 12 at one point. That could never happen now, right? I mean, it's their numbers are – I mean, what Florida won 2 in a row? Has anyone else won – more than that in a row in the last however long? I mean,
it's never going to happen. The circumstances were so different.
Right. I mean, in the one and done era and all, it's different now. But, man, 7 in a row.
And the remarkable part of it, one of the reasons it's such an interesting story, the primary reason I wanted to do this book was because it went beyond the basketball.
Right.
It wasn't just that they had great success. It was the 7 in a row while in a lot of ways just trying to hold things together. Depending on the year, you had Lew Alcindor either protesting for civil rights, or Bill Walton protesting American involvement in Vietnam, and you had other players joining in on both fronts. And here's this grandfather from Indiana, grandfatherly kind of guy. John Wooden is in the middle of all of this, not drinking, not cussing. He did smoke occasionally, but eventually quit. And Jim Murray, the great columnist from the LA Times, wrote that John Wooden is so square, he's divisible by 4. And
it's a good line.
And here's John Wooden trying to hold all this together with tape and bubble gum. And that, I think, is why it's so fascinating. 7 in a row is remarkable. But as we look back on it now with a 2024 perspective, it's even more amazing when you see everything that was going on behind the scenes.
Yeah, and there's an interesting part in there where it was like Wooden took blowback for one of the losses because he had suspended the player for smoking weed, and sort of then the heat came on him a little bit for that. There was a talk that maybe if he doesn't do that, maybe they win. And, you know, it was an interesting, I think he was standing on his values in the same way that maybe Kareem and Walton and other characters in the book stood on their values throughout it. And I think that's sort of a theme here, right? That each member, they did what they did to satisfy, they didn't compromise their worldview no matter what it was. And maybe that is the reason for the success.
Yeah, that's a great point. They were who they were,
right?
I guess might be the best.
Yeah.
And they were not going to compromise. The part of that also is that Kareem and Bill Walton were very similar in the sense that he played basketball with a passion. It wasn't just something to do to get an education or to get out of New York or something like that. They believed in the team game. They hated the spotlight. They loved seeing teammates get the publicity instead of them. So once they stepped on the court, Kareem could have wrecked the whole thing from the very beginning. You know, if he would have come out and said, "Where's my points? Give me the ball. Everybody get out of the way. Give me all the headlines." And then later on, the same could have happened with Bill. But that's exactly opposite of who they were. And when we talk about these guys being true to themselves, whether it's the two superstar centers or John Wooden, part of being true to themselves is that their personalities were all about the team. They were both superstars that were incredibly unselfish in the way they played, in the way they carried themselves on the court. It was different off the court, not in the selfishness way, but they wanted to be individuals who had a voice. On the court, it was John Wooden's voice that mattered to Kareem and to Bill. And that's why this whole thing succeeded, was because they were true to themselves as basketball players. And that was about team first, team always. And that's a huge reason that the dynasty lasted as long as it did.
Yeah, and you mentioned how Kareem could have blown it up, and you know, if he would have been me first about to put, I wonder if the lessons he learned here maybe helped him when Magic came to the Lakers. I was, you know, I had that thought when I was reading it, like, oh, we see the foundation being laid here for Kareem being a good teammate when Magic comes and kind of takes up some of his space with the Lakers, and that's a reason why maybe they continue to win, you know, at the NBA level as well. These guys both were NBA winners as well, and not just college winners. Yeah.
That's just who they always were.
Yep.
Even you look at Kareem and Lou Alcindor at the time at Power Memorial in New York City, and Bill Walton at Helix High just outside of San Diego. This is who they were in high school. UCLA was obviously a very, very positive influence because of John Wooden, and there were a lot of their teammates that we haven't really gotten into too much, who were the same way, that they came to UCLA and sort of had to put their personal dreams of stardom to the side. And they got that, and they played that role because they wanted to win. And so they were the same way. But this is just who Kareem was at the time, Lou Alcindor at the time, and Bill Walton was at the time. It did carry over through UCLA and into their pro careers. And certainly, as you mentioned, Kareem set his personality aside so Magic could shine in image, not just in play. And that was a factor. A lot of what they got at UCLA carried over, but this is just who they are, who they were. That they were like this before UCLA as well.
You said a few times what motivated you about this story was that you wanted to not just write about basketball games, that there's this, you know, other part of the book that happens off the court. And, you know, we live in a polarizing time, 2024, very similar to how there was a polarizing time, you know, when these guys were telling, you know, living their lives and creating this story. And I think that if you read this book, and you can tell me if I'm right or wrong, no matter where, and maybe I've sort of hinted at this too, is what I liked about everyone in the book, but no matter where you stand politically about any of the issues told in the book, you very much can respect the fact that these men stood for they were authentic. You know what I mean? And I can respect anyone who's being authentic. And regardless of if I agree or disagree, if I know I'm getting from their heart, if they're being true, it changes the dynamic. It changes the conversation. And maybe these guys had the success they had shaping the political issues the way they did because they were authentic, because they didn't come off as, like, to use a modern term, like, they weren't just like woke guys. They weren't just virtue signaling. Like, these guys were who they were. And if one thing you could count on is they were being authentic and true to themselves. And I think that, I don't want to say softens the politics a little bit, but it makes, you know, if you come into it, maybe if you were to come into it in this, like, 2024, like, combative attitude, like, you know, everything is my team versus your team or whatever, I think that's where the soft landing comes in, where you get to understand the characters at a much deeper and personal level, regardless of where you stand and what they stood for.
Well, that's nice of you to say. I appreciate it, because that's one of the goals I was going for.
And it came through. Yep, it came through for sure.
Yeah. I appreciate that. It's not a political book, but there's politics in there.
Right.
It's not a history book, but there's history in there. It's not like we're doing American Revolution history, but there's certainly, again, the whole point of the book is to put it in the context of the time, the backdrop of what society was like around the nation and in Los Angeles and in this one college campus in particular, the 1960s and the 1970s. So you're going to talk about Vietnam and civil rights and all that stuff, but you're also talking about Summer of Love and We talked about the music scene in LA, which was, to put it mildly, fantastic.
Right.
The music scene then is mind blowing.
We know that Walton loved that. Yeah, Walton was a big
absolutely. Yep. And that was one of the, obviously, so there's a lot of fun history in there as well. But yeah, hopefully, even if people don't agree with what the 21st century Kareem Abdul-Jabbar stands for, they can appreciate the 20th century Lew Alcindor. And as you said, taking the stands, and we mentioned before, being true to yourself. And that's the same for all of them. John Wooden was not going to change for anybody, just the same as, and it wasn't a stubbornness. It was just, this is who I am, and I don't put on airs, and I'm not going to phony it up for anybody to look like I'm a hip guy in the 60s.
Right. You know? Certainly
sure,
wasn't.
Yeah. Sure, I'm a square. What about it? It was one of those things.
The book, again, is called Kingdom on Fire, Kareem Wooden, Walton, and the Turbulent Days of the UCLA Basketball Dynasty by Scott Howard Cooper. We have Scott joining us for the first time today. What do you hope readers take out of this most? Like I said, it's a, like, and like you just articulated too, there's a lot there, you know, there's a lot in this book. Like you said, history, politics, sports, teamwork. Is there a certain part of that you want readers to hold on to the most? Is there, what's the through line you're hoping that most people can pull out of there and walk away with when they're done reading it?
That there had never been and never will be the story of a team and its time quite like this one. It's not sort of a, hey, let's follow a team for a season kind of thing. We talk about all the championships, but there's a specific focus on the seven in a row. The bookends are basically the arrival of Lew Alcindor through the departure of Bill Walton.
Right.
Superstar center to superstar center. And we're never going to see anything like that. And I don't just mean because of the nonstop winning. It's the times. And it's college students saying, I don't want to be here anymore. This, we're winning all the time and it's not fun. And remarkable, but true. We're winning all the time, but it's not fun. That the expectations were massive and it just got to be, in a lot of ways, all that success came to be a burden. So we're never going to see anything like that again. And I guess that would be the takeaway is people will read it and say, yeah, I knew all about this team. Maybe they've watched old clips. Maybe they grew up in that time. Maybe they were college students at the time and they were living all of these pages themselves as they're going along. But in this context, it's an amazing story.
I remember the night that I got the Sports Illustrated had this issue. I don't know if it was 20th or 25th anniversary of the magazine. And maybe you'll remember it because it had the famous cover with Ali was on the cover and he's kind of peeking above the book or the magazine or whatever it was. And I remember my dad buying that for me at the grocery store. I remember flipping through and, you know, learning more about UCLA there and appreciating the, like I said earlier, that they were the team, you know, in college basketball. And this Kingdom on Fire, Kareem, Wooden, and Walton, and the Turbulent Days of the UCLA Basketball Dynasty gave me a much deeper perspective and understanding of the hows and the whys and the whos that made that happen. It's on sale March 5th. This is going to go up sometime this week, so it's either already out or it's going to be out any day now, and you know how books are. You might walk into a Barnes & Noble right now, and it might be on the shelf somewhere already, but certainly by March 5th, it will be there. Scott, I really thank you very much for giving me a chance to read it and promote it with you. I'll let you go in a second, but I got to ask real quickly, because it says in the back of the book, you know, you've been covering college and pro sports since the 80s, the Los Angeles Times, Sports Illustrated, ESPN, and more. it's an interesting time for sports media, and I do a lot of sports media on here. And I'm just curious, when you think about the business that you've, you know, raised your family, you know, provided for your family, doing your life's work, what do you think about sports media and where we're headed with the demise of Sports Illustrated? You know, a couple of weeks ago we almost had, or whatever's going on there. You know, newspapers are less. You know, it's a crazy time. I got to ask someone, a vet, an expert here. What? Give me some thoughts on sports media in 2024 before I let you go.
Well, it's obviously very sad because I don't look at it just that. Boy, there's a lot of jobs going away. I look at it, there's a lot of friends of mine losing jobs. This is personal. And I know that a lot of people out there celebrate the demise of the media. They're anti-media, sometimes for a good reason, not always. I think a lot of people use the media as an excuse for their own problems and their inability to understand situations. But I think it would help if people would remember these are people losing jobs, and that's never a good thing in any way, and certainly not for our society. And people want a strong America. You can't celebrate losing jobs. But beyond that, beyond that personal impact to me, I'm not just a sports writer. I'm a sports reader. I'm a sports fan. I'm like,
same,
you
yeah.
know, you and yep. you and all your listeners, and I think that there's great value in good sports writing. It's obviously not the end of the world. Who wins the Super Bowl or the NBA championship, or we've got the Olympics coming up, but dang, isn't it fun after Super Bowl to read what people say?
Right, like Peter King breaking down the winning play with Andy Reid, that kind of thing. Yeah.
And it could be anything. It could be.
Right, I just thought of that one. Yeah,
it could be something analytical like that. It could be just the straight game coverage about I want to relive this again. And I'm talking about reading something, whether it's old school, a paper product, whatever. Once upon a time when those existed, or online newspapers, magazines. I'm talking about great podcasts like yours that people want to come back and talk different sports to the TV, the radio, any outlets. I think that adds to the fun for a sports fan. And at the end of the day, that's what it comes down to for me. I'm a sports fan. And whether it's reading something a couple hours after the game online, or if you see something in a newspaper the next morning, or you read something in a book 50 years later about the UCLA basketball dynasty, it's all part of enjoying sports. And that's me. I'm the guy who enjoys sports. I wish I had the answer to the biggest question of all, what happens next? Where do we go from here in sports media? But it's spiraling so fast. If you would have told anybody 10 years ago what would be happening in 2024, they wouldn't have believed you.
Right.
So anybody who says, all right, look, this is what's going to happen in sports media next, they're guessing. And I don't know the answer to that. I just know it's sad. And I hope we hang on to at least what we have now and can dig in, and I can keep reading and watching and listening people talking sports.
Well, you know, I'm a sports fan, you know, my whole life. I'm a sports media nerd too. Like, I would get the USA Today on Monday, and the first thing I would do is turn the page to Rudy Marsky's column, you know,
because right.
I've just always been interested in that stuff. And, you know, I started this show in 2011. I was kind of early to the podcasting game. And one thing I learned in the beginning is that if I knew one person's email at Sports Illustrated, I had everyone's, you know, not that I was, you know, who's the Watson, you know, I'm not some genius detective. I just figured that out, that everyone's email was the same format or whatever. And Damon Hack, speaking of UCLA, a good UCLA guy, Damon Hack, came out the first time he came on the show, he had written a gamer, an old school, you know, Sports Illustrated gamer about a Monday Night Football game between the Jets and the Broncos. And I just read it in Sports Illustrated that week. And I reached out and he came, and there's almost no such thing as a gamer anymore. You know what I mean? Where do you read that doesn't exist?
Right.
It's like, you know, even, you know, Damon himself, he's not talking golf on TV now. You know what I mean? Like that,
right?
That that's gone. Like, that part of it is gone, and I don't think that makes being a sports fan better. That's for sure. You know. So,
well, let me tap into your expertise.
Sure.
Since you've been doing this for so long, and you have your own wealth of insights. Do you think people, sports fans, are going to miss it now that it's at least partially gone?
It's like the cable bundle.
I mean, we have to be honest. This isn't the end of the cutting. There's going to be more people being tossed overboard around the country in the months and the years to come. Do you think there's going to come a point that people are going to say, you know, dang, I wish it hadn't gone to an extreme. I like going on the internet at the end of the night and being able to read 5 stories about the football game I just watched on TV earlier that afternoon. Do you think people are going to miss it, or am I wrong?
No.
There's a lot of people out there celebrating the demise and saying good riddance to the media. I'm glad they're gone.
See, I think what they're celebrating, I think there's been times, especially in the last 10 years, where the media has, or people within the media, to say the media, that's such a broad thing, but people within the media have sacrificed their credibility as independent and journalists to become activists. And it's happened, people who are on the right in the country and people on the left. It's not one or the other who's been exclusive to this. And I think when people get excited about the demise, that's what they're excited about. Like, oh, you did that thing. You weren't honest about that thing that I cared about, and you got what you deserve. But again, they're taking one thing in this broad, like, it's not the demise of that. It's this bigger, you know, it's like they were mad at someone in the third floor of a skyscraper, and they celebrated when they tore the whole skyscraper down. You know what you know, like, it's like, no, you were just mad at that person on the third floor. It wasn't this, you know, and like I mentioned the cable bundle. Like, we were so happy to cut the cord. Now, I've never cut the cord. I'm an old school guy. And I didn't cut it because my number one thing is I'm a Saints fan in Buffalo. And I needed the Sunday ticket. So I've kept DirecTV all along. And even after they moved it to YouTube, I haven't cut yet. And I don't think I will. All sports fans right now, what do they complain about? Oh, to be a Yankees fan, I need 6 different subscriptions to watch every game. It's like, yeah, you were so happy to cut the cord on the cable bundle, but what you didn't realize is your grandmother was subsidizing your sports addiction, you know, by paying ESPN and Yes and every other thing just so she could watch, you know, the Knitting Channel or whatever. and now what do you got? You know, and I think it's going to be similar to that there's going to be regret. Like, I go to the mall and I'm just walking around thinking, like, why have we sacrificed malls? This used to be so fun here. You know, like, why are we doing this? You know what I mean? We really just want to buy everything on Amazon. Like, you don't really want to try your pants on anymore. I don't know. I feel like I do this all the time. Like, I'm just like, man, really? We're doing this? Like, I guess I understand why it's happening, but man, really? I feel like one day, it's like all of a sudden malls are going to start getting built again. Everyone's going to be glad to be in them. I don't know. I don't know, man. I don't know. I'm just a jabroni in Buffalo doing a podcast in his spare bedroom. It's going to have to be someone above me to figure this stuff out. But I will say, like, when I was growing up, I knew that Sports Illustrated came on Thursday, right? And I would get off the school bus on Thursday. I would walk right to the mailbox. I'd take it out. I'd flip to the back page, which is the Rick Riley column. And I would read his column walking up the driveway. If I hadn't finished it, by the time I got to the door, I would read it in the stinky boot room we had. That was like this room with 600 pairs of shoes in it. You know, I would finish it there. And my mom would be like, are you coming in the house? You know, and I was like, oh, yeah, a minute. It was so important to me. Who's on the cover? What did Riley write about? What's the long one? And then in 2021, by a stroke of a miracle, I still don't know what he was thinking, John Wertheim reached out to me and said, can we talk? I want to write a story about you and the podcast. And in March of 21, when it came out, I mean, I cried for an hour. You know, like, for some reason, Sports Illustrated had written about me and my thing. And a couple weeks ago, when they're like, oh, Sports Illustrated might not be a thing anymore. Like, I was just that, like, really? We're going to have America and not have Sports Illustrated? How? You know? And I think there's going to be other things that strike the same chord for other people. And, you know, I just hope the pendulum swings back. I don't know, yeah. Scott.
Well, people can't say they didn't get their money's worth from your podcast today.
That's right.
We've covered UCLA basketball. We've covered trying on pants, yes. Shoes, knitting, the American economy. You have the captures everything podcast.
All right, let me give it one more time. Kingdom on Fire, Kareem Wooden Walton, and the Turbulent Days of the UCLA Basketball Dynasty by Scott Howard Cooper, March 5th. Anything else you want to plug or anything else you want to say, where to go, follow you on Twitter, more information, any of those Substack, anything you want to give out?
Just to say, I really hope people enjoy reading this as much as I enjoy writing it. It was a blast. As I said, it's something I'd wanted to do for many years. I'm so thrilled to be able to partner with a great publishing house, Atria, under the Simon & Schuster umbrella.
They're great to me, by the way. They're really good to me.
And continue to, they were fantastic, just a first-class operation. So I hope that energy and excitement that I had in writing it, I hope that comes through on the pages. And lastly, thanks for a great conversation. This has been a lot of fun.
Yeah, thank you sincerely for letting me be a part of the promotion and the journey in the book. Hopefully people will respond to it and enjoy this. And hopefully you'll consider coming back. I'll save your number.
Let's do it again.
All right, I want to thank Scott Howard Cooper and Jeff Passan for being on the podcast today. Don't forget, you can find this episode and all episodes of the Sportscasters podcast on soundcloud.com/sports-casters. You can find us on Twitter @sports_casters. thesportscasters@gmail.com is the email, @sportscasters on Instagram. The 24-inch podcast is available also on the Sportscasters feed on SoundCloud, @24inchpodcast on Twitter, @24_inch_podcast on Instagram. The email is 24inchpodcast@gmail.com. Hit me up there. Also, keep an eye on the North-South Connection YouTube page. Going to be doing some wrestling videos. It's WrestleMania season. And my guy Ryan Gray and the good people at North-South Connection have me in mind for some videos there. Already did one looking back at the WrestleMania career of Demolition. So check that out if you can. Don't forget, a new episode of the Sportscasters is just a few days away. Andrew Marchand from the New York Post, now The Athletic, will join us for the first time in a while. Really excited to have Andrew on. And also Brett Martin, who is the author of one of the great book club books of all time, Difficult Men, will join us from New Orleans as well. All right, one last thing for tonight. We played the highlight off the top, and I just wanted to talk for a minute or two about Pat Kane's unbelievable return to Chicago and what was an unbelievable night for Blackhawks fans and the NHL in general. The Blackhawks had decided, and it was actually announced at a Pearl Jam concert, that they were going to retire the number of Chris Chelios. They decided to retire it at this game, which was a Red Wings game where Chris had also played, which happened to end up being where Pat Kane signed. And so on one night, you have the retirement of Chris Chelios' jersey, one of the great American hockey players of all time, played college hockey at Wisconsin, you know, won Stanley Cups, had great seasons in Montreal, Detroit, Chicago, of course, the retiring his number. And on the same night, Showtime himself, Patrick Kane, shows up. Connor Bedard is back in the lineup. It's one of his first games back. It's not the first or anything, but he's just been back from the broken jaw for a week or two. So we have the former first overall pick, 3-cup winner, Patrick Kane, returning. The latest first overall pick, Connor Bedard, returning. And we have Chris Chelios raised to the rafters. The Blackhawks lead most of the game 2-1. Kane gets an assist on Alex DeBrincat, also a former Blackhawk player. Goal late tie the game at two. And then in true Patrick Kane form, and it's, I said this to someone else, all these guys, they never miss these shots. When there's a game like this, when there's a big moment, they don't miss. They're born for this. And Patrick Kane gets a breakaway pass from DeBrincat, comes down, buries it, you know, goes over to the crowd. He's saying, showtime, baby, showtime, giving it to the crowd a little bit. Early in the game, after the first whistle of the game that led to a television stoppage, the Blackhawks played a tribute video. There was a long standing ovation for Patrick Kane. You know, three, you know, tips of the cap. Just amazing, amazing outplay of love and support for Kane. The guy that raised three Stanley Cup banners. You know, Patrick Kane scored an overtime winning goal in the second round of the to win the series. An overtime winning goal to win the series. In the second round of the playoffs, the conference finals on a hat trick in overtime wins the series, and in the Stanley Cup finals to win the Stanley Cup. Several other overtime goals in the playoffs, however many points, three rings. I said it, we've said it over the years on this podcast, way back to when Don was here, that Patrick Kane was going to retire the greatest American hockey player of all time. And if he never played again, if yesterday was somehow his last game, he would easily retire as the greatest American Hockey League player of all time. Now, someone like Austin Matthews, maybe he can catch him someday. Better start winning the playoffs, though. Better start scoring those big goals. You know, Patrick Kane's a guy, his nickname is Showtime, and he's always lived up to it. He's been unbelievable. He's won a Conn Smythe. He's won an MVP. You know, he's so decorated. Unbelievable career. I hope he can find a spot on the Olympic team. If he's fit for that, that'd be great. I don't know if that's realistic or not. When the NHL players go, the U.S. is going to be so stacked. But it'd be so great to have him there. He could win that maybe too. But he doesn't need to win anything else. He doesn't need to score another goal. He doesn't need to do anything else. And he's the greatest American hockey player of all time. Mike Modano's great. Of course, I love Pat LaFontaine. Chris Chelios, yeah, his jersey's retired. Star on a few different teams. Played forever. Great player. Throw whoever you want. Patrick Kane has played 1,210 NHL games. He scored 464 goals. He's well on his way to 500. He has 804 assists. He has 12,060 points, and that's just in the regular season. That's just the regular season. So now let's go see. Oh, did he ever do anything in the playoffs? Oh, let's see. He's played 143 playoff games. He has 138 points and three Stanley Cups. My God, a three-time cup winner, won the 07-08 Calder, won the Art Ross Trophy, four-time All-Star, Hart Trophy in 15-16, Conn Smythe Trophy, Pearson Trophy, Art Ross Trophy, 100th Anniversary Team, first overall pick, Buffalo, New York, greatest American hockey player of all time, Patrick Kane.